Jody Zaroka.
Hello, hello, how are you? So we're here, and I would like to thank Visit Florida and Visit St. Pete's for hosting last night's event and hosting the whole summit. Isn't it this beautiful destination to be here? So let me introduce you to Rosemary, who you met last night. So big applause, Rosemary. Thank you.
So good morning again. Please excuse my voice. A lot of talking last night, and hope you had a great time. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Well, once again, I'd like to welcome everybody to St. Pete Clearwater. We're so thrilled to have IITA here in our own backyard, and we've got such a great team. I'm really excited to introduce you to our new president and CEO who has joined us this morning. Steve Hayes is going to be coming up in just a minute. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the destination, maybe some of the things you haven't had a chance to see while you're here with us. Oh, there we go. So in our destination, we have, let me actually go back. There we go. Wanted to talk a little bit about what makes St. Pete Clearwater so special, especially for your clients. Quick little geography lesson or reminder, if you're not from Florida, St. Pete Clearwater is only 90 minutes west of the Orlando area, and that's so important for not only our leisure clients, but our meeting clients that are coming into the destination, and we tell them that they can come west to America's Best, and it's only 90 minutes away. So it's very, very convenient for people who want what we call the best of Florida in a vacation. And as you see, as you look out the windows here, we've got beautiful water here in the Gulf of Mexico. We have gorgeous sunsets that we were able to see last night, but there's so much more to our destination beyond the beaches. We are home to so many great communities that have their own feel, they have their own flavor, they have their own special qualities to them. And some of them are like Tarpon Springs, that's our Greek community, which is in the northern part, yes, is in the northern part of our county. We also have Gulfport, which is our artist community. We have Dunedin, which has part of the Pinellas Trail, which is our 40-mile bike trail that rides right through the center of Main Street. So these great communities throughout the destination beyond the beaches. And then, of course, some of you were able to take advantage of the fact that we had a tour that went out to the Dalí Museum and the Chihuly Collection and the new Museum of Western Art. The arts and culture scene has really just exploded in our destination. So we invite you to come back if you didn't get a chance on this visit to really check out the art scene that's happening in St. Pete Clearwater. And then another thing that our international and domestic clients really love, and that is our craft brewery scene. And we have over 35 craft breweries in the destination, and we call our trail the Gulp Coast. And we actually are home to one of the oldest breweries in Florida, and that's actually located up in Dunedin. So I wanted to end my presentation, a very brief one for you today, with a video that we hope will inspire you to think of St. Pete Clearwater as you're putting together your tours and your itineraries. And we hope it'll inspire you to come back and visit us again as a leisure traveler yourselves. you. So once again, on behalf of our entire team, we sincerely appreciate the opportunity to be the host destination for IITA in 2020. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that when you step out on the beach, either this afternoon or this evening, remember that TripAdvisor named St. Pete Beach the number 4 beach in America in 2019. And just north of us, TripAdvisor named Clearwater Beach the number 1 beach in America 2 years in a row, 2018 and 2019. So we hope you have a chance to explore our destination a little bit more. And I am very pleased to introduce to you the new president and CEO of Visit St. Pete Clearwater, Steve Hayes.
All right, you know you have an awesome team when literally I crossed off all these notes because she covered everything. So give it up for Rose Marie. In fact, Michelle is here as well from our team. I think she's in the back. And I've come into a great situation here in St. Pete Clearwater. And I was previously in this area, but on the other side of the water for a very long time. In fact, it was during that time I got to know Lisa Simon. And believe it or not, Lisa, it's been, I think, 24 years since the last time she had a meeting here, so in this area. So I'm glad to be back a part of this. But the team we have at Visit St. Pete Clearwater is awesome, and they help make this community. The other folks that do that as well are those that are our industry stakeholders that deal with our customers each and every day. And if you're part of that team here in Pinellas County and St. Pete Clearwater, can you please stand? I know we got Oliver and great. See, Oliver. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that there's one gentleman that's here that's representing our airport who's also busy, but Alfredo's representing St. Pete Clearwater National Airport. So, Alfredo, you could have stood up at that point. So I just want to really welcome everyone to our community. What a great, great opportunity to have you here to show you a little bit of what we have. Like I said, I've been gone 7 years, and in that 7 years, I was just amazed of all the reinvestment in this community, all the development that's taking place now and in the next several years that continue to make us a very, very dynamic community. I did want to mention, because again, Rose covered everything, but Rose, there's one thing I think I'm going to mention because I think it's very pertinent. You said, well, glad you're here to visit. You're glad you're here to experience what we have, and we hope you come back to actually visit and at another time. I'm going to take it one step further because somebody will be speaking a little bit here in a few minutes, actually visited, and then he chose to live here. And Roger Dow even went through and said, you know what, I love it so much here, I'm getting a place. So if you all want to sign up for that little bit, you can as well. So again, on behalf of all of us at Visit St. Pete Clearwater, I'd like to welcome you to our wonderful community. We hope you enjoy your business transactions, your educational opportunities, and more importantly, the community as a whole. Thank you.
So this would not happen if we did not have sponsors. And without their help, we could not put together this summit where we could meet and exchange ideas and interact with each other. So we would like to have the sponsors stand up so we can give them a round of applause for supporting IITA and our mission. Thank you so much. Without your contribution, this summit would not be happening. So we want more sponsors for next year. So you can look for me afterwards and sign up. I also would like to, we have a lot of new timers. So if you could please stand, we want to give you a warm welcome. So please stand up, the new timer. I hope you are enjoying so far what we have been offering, and I hope that you will sign up for next year and come back year after year. We need your help in building this community. It's all together that we come to create a better future for all of us. Also, would like to welcome all the non-members that are participating in this summit. These are people that we are really happy that are participating. So if you could stand up if you're not a member but are in the summit. Well, there were some. Yeah. Yeah. So this year we have changed a little bit how we're going to meet and interact with each other. As you all know, this is an association, is not a trade show. We inspire to advocate and teach and educate suppliers as well as tour operators, and we all want to come together to do that. So for us this year, we're going to try the new marketplace. It's going to be like a speed dating, like Tinder. Bad life. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have 3 power hours. The suppliers are going to have are distributed in 3 groups, group 1, group 2, and group 3. It's on your badge. You have it in your badge. And then you're going to go to that power hour. You're going to meet those buyers. We're going to all be sitting in the boardroom, and you're going to start in one table and go to the next, to the next, to the next. If you are not in that power hour for meetings, we have created extra educational sessions for you so that you have an option to go to attend one of the educational sessions in the breakout. I hope you enjoy. We would really listen to you from last year. We wanted everybody to meet as many people as possible. Just have an open mind, not because they are not going to sell your destination or something. There might be a connection that you can make somehow. So there's always a possibility to do business. Also, I was very happy to have an amazing summit committee. Without their support and their help, I would not be standing here. So please stand up. You know who you are, so we can give them a round of applause. Thank you. You did a great job. So now I would like to introduce the man, the one, the chairman, Gary Schiller.
Good morning. When I first did this program 3 years ago, but for my first summit, we were in Biloxi, and Lisa couldn't make it, so let me tell you, the pile of notes they gave me to talk about were much larger than the ones I have today. Thank you, Jordy, for a great event, for your dedication and leadership, and also to the committee for putting together a great show. Last night we had a great white party. Tomorrow night we're going to have the Roaring 20s, but this 20s and not the last ones. So my challenge is to let's make 2020 and the 20s our decade for growth and influence in the industry. We have a few updates on the successes that we've had this year and a few association business matters. So this is our annual business meeting and my last time to start the meeting. The meeting is started. First of all, we started out the year in Savannah. Where's Mindy? Mindy, you did a fantastic job last year, and we'd like to thank you again for all that we did there. It was amazing, and next year, Rosemary, we're going to be saying the same thing to you, but it will be from a new chairman to be announced. We officially this year kicked off our Inbound Insider Steps to Success educational and training program powered by Elan Marketing Group and featuring the leading inbound travel trainer and consultant in the industry, Jennifer Ackerson. Yay. If you don't know about this program, suppliers, DMOs, you will get a chance to hear her. She's going to be doing a presentation in the afternoon, so if you're not in the marketplace, you can hear her presentation either today or tomorrow. In April, IITA co-sponsored Destination Capitol Hill, presented by U.S. Travel Association. This gave us an opportunity to participate in meetings with our members of Congress, as well as the National Park Service. We do have some good news to share on the National Park Service side of things. Started this back in Portland, but I'm wearing my National Park Service socks today, so we can talk about them. Right now, there are proposals that the National Parks are going to be putting out. They are on the desk of the Secretary of the Department of Interior, and as soon as he signs off on them, which we was hoping was like 2 weeks ago, then we will be presenting these to everybody so that we can have our discussion and go forward as IITA on the comments that we would like to offer to them. On the CUA program, we did have a success. That should have been started January 2020. We helped to get it postponed until January 2021. So we have an extra year there before a CUA program will be initiated. We also were able to convince the National Park Service that to go to each and every park to get a CUA was going to be just so time consuming that a lot of parks were going to get totally left off our list of parks that we were sending groups to. They have agreed to have an online system so that we can apply in one location for all the parks that we want to visit in 1 year. The original proposal was for $300 per park. That has been adjusted to an application fee for each company of $300 and then a $50 per park fee. That is much better for everybody. What we're waiting to hear on right now is the entrance fee structure. They first proposed a per person's fee. We very much opposed the per person fee because it was just ridiculously high for larger groups going into the parks. So for the last 22 years, since 1998, they have been having a fee structure based on vehicle size. So now we're waiting to find out exactly how many vehicle sizes we have to worry about and what the cost is for certain parks, because it gets very complicated. But that's what we're waiting for at this point to find out what this fee is going to be on a per vehicle basis. The interesting thing is that we're also hearing that one of the things that was difficult with the CUA was the reporting at the end of the year. Well, they're working to streamline the reporting requirements and may even eliminate them altogether, which would be excellent. But we would be the only bus operators would be the only ones with a CUA that would not have to do this reporting. So we've had some significant wins with the National Park Service, but we're going to keep monitoring them because we found that the way to work with the national parks is not to just complain, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this, we don't like it. We go to them and say, you've offered this, here's what's wrong with that proposal, but here's some suggestions of ours that we feel will help you make your decisions in the future. Excuse me. So we are also going out to our membership and saying, if you have solutions, if you have ways that we can suggest to the national parks, that helps us very much. Like most of you, IITA had an excellent IPW, and I would like to get a show of hands how many people were in Anaheim and attended our little function right before Disney. That's how many people we expected. We estimate we had slightly more than 250 people. And if we'd have known we had that kind of recognition and we're going to have that kind of success for our reception, we probably would have looked for a little bigger venue. But it worked out very well, and it was great to see such response from all of our partners. Later in the summer, we met in Durango, and thanks to Visit Durango and Marcia. Where's Marcia? Over here. Thank you very much for all you helped us with there. I must say that trying to do a board meeting and keep the attention of about 25, 26 people while sitting in a car on the train going from Durango to Silverton is not an easy thing to do. Okay, photo stop, 10 minutes, go. So, but we had a very successful one, and this was our first time where we also had our committees meeting with our board of directors. So we had some very good work done on the summit, membership growth, and other critical issues and governance matters. So it was a very good couple of days in Durango. I would like to thank our leaders. We not only have the summit committee, and thank you all, you've just been recognized, but we also have a couple of other committees that I would also like to have stand and be recognized. We have the advisory council. Thank you very much. The advisory council is comprised of suppliers and DMOs who are sustaining members, and as a result, they meet with the board of directors, and they give us their input based on various issues, you know, where they're coming from within the tourism industry. We also have the advocacy committee. Yay, black and look here. The advocacy committee monitors issues related to inbound travel and advises on appropriate positions such as brand USA, visa waiver, all these kind of things. So that's they tell us what our position should be there. And we also have the governance committee. Now this is the group of people that you really need to thank, because they have the great task of going through our bylaws and keeping us current and up to date. We've also held several, one thing on there. I've heard several people at this one say, how can I get more involved? Those are the areas and the summit committee. That's how you can get more involved. Join one of the committees and get involved and help us in our planning and in our future. We've had several member events this year, New York, Los Angeles, Orlando. Some of these were hosted by Hornblower, Intrepid Air, Sea, and Space Museum, and Planet Hollywood. I was able to do the one in LA on the Hornblower boat. We had a great evening. If one of these is in your area, help us, participate, bring new people, bring people that you would like to see join. We've also had we started here with the Operator Forum, and that was very successful, so we're starting to do operator forums around the country. We had one in Orlando, one in New York, and we're hoping to do more of these around the country, and if, once again, please participate. Yesterday afternoon, we not only had our operator forum, which started in Biloxi 3 years ago, but 4 summits ago, we had the operator forum. It started as 45 minutes and just continues to grow every year because we need more time. Even yesterday, we had 2 hours and we still ran out of time. But we also decided this is a way for our operators to tell us what they think the issues are. So this year we also started with a supplier forum and a DMO forum. And I'm hearing from some people that they were very successful. And we're hoping to get that. One person said, you had 2 hours for the operator forum. Why didn't we have 2 hours? So we'll look to expand those in the future. We want your input into what you think we can do as an association. Now, before we get off to some fantastic speakers this morning, Jordy has already said that we have a lot of seminars and programs going. And I just wanted to throw in one little thing here, totally off script. Sorry, Lisa. I've been in this business now for, we'll sort of round it off and say, we'll round it down and say 40 years. It's more like 48 as of June. But when I started, you had to learn from your own experiences. We have put together educational programs here where a lot of you can start learning from other people's experiences, and I wish I had that 40 years ago. So please, do go to our seminars, listen to our speakers, and participate. During the operator forum, the inbound operators voted to move our association from New York to Kentucky. There were some reasons for all of this, and instead of me rambling on, because if I go much further, we're going to need the drummers up here again to get everybody awake. Let's have Lisa Simon, our executive director, come up at this point and explain all of this to everybody. And thank you very much. Have a great summit. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. I will try to keep it simple, but if you have any questions afterwards, let me know, and we'll be glad to answer them for you. It's just a small operational matter that we are going to move the corporation from New York, the IITA Corporation, from New York to Kentucky. New York actually has some stricter nonprofit laws, and in the way we operate, like things as simple as electronic voting are not compliant with the laws in New York. So we looked for states that had more favorable nonprofit statutes and laws. And Kentucky is one, which is great because we're operating there, so it makes it very easy and nice and simple. So we needed, per our bylaws, we needed a vote from the voting membership, which are the inbound operator members. And so they voted yesterday to actually dissolve in New York because, again, New York doesn't do anything simple for us. So we actually have to dissolve the organization to start it somewhere else. They don't let you just move out of New York. You just have to close. So as we close down in New York, we will start up in Kentucky. It's operational. We handle it at the staff level. You won't see any changes except for one, and that is the election. As you probably have seen, the election has been delayed. We usually have our board election prior to the summit, and we can't have that until we are incorporated in Kentucky. We expect this to all take place and be wrapped up within the next 30 to 60 days. You just never know with legal matters in the state of New York. But anyway, so again, you'll be seeing the election coming to you very soon. The nominating committee has already been doing its work. It has one more meeting to make its nominations for the next board of directors, and then that will come to you for a vote once we're up and running in Kentucky, and then the new board will take over. So this is the last summit, as Gary was alluding to, for this board of directors. And at this time, I'd kind of like to do a special thank you to them. We had the opportunity to give them their service awards at the board meeting Sunday. But they really deserve a shout out because this board is really a risk-taking, forward-thinking board for this organization and has really made some changes. I think that most of you, I hear frequently, most of you have really seen some significant changes over the last several years. And so I really want to thank them for all of their leadership and everything they've done for the organization. So if you would just please stand as I call your name. We have our inbound operator directors, Lena Ross from America For You. Pabs Ragava, Tours Limited, who actually had to leave for a business emergency earlier. Elliot Calloway, Bonnetel Exclusive Travel. Gloria Land, Tour America, who also could not be here with us today. Our associate directors are Robert Graff, Bindlestiff Tours. Here he is in the back. Jody Cumming with Pier 39, who unfortunately couldn't be with us. Petra Hackworth with Travel Oregon. Sandy Lackey, BWH Hotel Group. Paul Mason, Wyndham Hotels and Resorts. Karen Picciarello, Mears Transportation. I'm not sure she's here yet, but she will be later today. And Ken Testani actually has been on the board for the past several years. He changed positions and sectors of the industry. So Karen took over the transportation seat. But Ken, thank you so much again for all of your input as well. Our honorary board members are Kathleen DeMonico with Brand USA, Malcolm Smith, who was here earlier with IPW US Travel Association. Director Emeritus is Richard Karakas with Gray Line City Sightseeing in New York. And I have to make just a comment, side comment, because when I was looking at our incorporation papers in New York from 1991, Richard was an incorporator for the organization at that time, and he will be an incorporator from the current board in Kentucky. So our longest running, here he is, Richard, our longest running board member. Thank you, Richard. And for his wisdom and guidance and friendship, I want to especially thank our chair from Rocky Mountain Holiday Tours, Gary Schluter. He has been just a delight to work with. Gary leaves us with the legacy that you heard a lot about in his remarks from his original vision when he came into the position, and that was to have a robust education program that would help the U.S. suppliers and DMOs and industry at large really understand the business of inbound operators, and also increased advocacy from this organization, including the several wins that we've seen with the national parks under his leadership. So thank you, Gary. So in addition to this morning's wonderful speakers, we have a few other industry guests and partners I'd like to welcome and introduce. We have Carol Ann Asante with SYTA, Student Youth Travel Association. I'm not seeing her this morning. I'm sorry? Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped the executive committee. They're a little important. Garrett DeVos with American Tours International couldn't be here with us today, but he's on our executive committee and has been on the board for many years. Our secretary is Rafael Villanueva, Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. Our treasurer is Pia Jayatalaka, Travalco now. She just changed positions to Travalco. Thank you very much, Pia. And our vice chairman, Peter Van Berkel, Travalco. And for his wisdom and guidance, I'm just kidding, I won't introduce Gary again. So we do have some additional special guests and partners with us today, and I would like to introduce them to you as well. Carol Ann, I already introduced. Jeff Ernst Friedman with the Open Travel Alliance. He's going to be speaking tomorrow on connectivity. Jeff Gaduck, Premier Travel Media. Jeff is our publishing partner and does our Inbound Insider magazine. Julie Heiser with the National Travel and Tourism Office will be doing her forecast later today. Loanne Holden, I'm not sure if she's in yet, with International GLBTQ Association. Ruth Minch, U.S. Travel Association, IPW. Rick Still and Mike Jay from La Cita. Greg Takahara, CEO from Tourism Cares, here in the back. And later today, Catherine Prather from NTA will be joining us. She's not here yet this morning. So without further ado, what you've really come to see is our wonderful speaker lineup this morning. And I'd like to introduce our featured speaker, who's going to give us a state of the industry update for today and what we can expect ahead. This man really needs no introduction. However, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that his leadership has really heightened the international sector within the U.S. travel industry at large and with our federal government, and continues to advance our issues to keep the industry strong and vibrant. Thank you, and please join me in welcoming Roger Dow, U.S. Travel.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and it's great to be in St. Pete Clearwater, luckiest guy in the world with this job. I live here, and so one would think, isn't it easy to just drive across, except a few things happening in Washington. I had to be in Washington yesterday, so I flew last night. Now I got to fly back to Washington right after I finished speaking. But great, it's a great place. I mean, you Rose talked all about it, but we decided to live here because there's so much. Years ago, they used to call this area God's waiting room. Now the average age is 41 years old. It's a young, youthful, amazing place. Just and so much going on. You heard about it. So enough that Steve will tell you more about that. When you're asked to speak somewhere, I've learned don't prepare your marks too far in advance because things might change. Gary and Lisa said, could you be? I said, yeah, right down the street. That's easy. Sure, I'll do that. I didn't know that something called the coronavirus would be on our minds. So I'm going to deviate a lot from my remarks because I want to share with you, because this is probably the most important group for understanding what's going on, because you touch everybody who comes to this country. So that's so important. First of all, it was announced December 31st in Wuhan, China, which very few of us, maybe Fred knew, but not very few of us, maybe Elliot, but I had never been to Wuhan, but 11 million people, small little place, was announced there, and it started as all these things started small. I've got my notes here, and I keep crossing out the number of cases, and I've got about six cross outs, but right now, As far as we know right now, it's about 20,000 people have been infected with this. 427 deaths as of yesterday. Now, it's spread to 25 countries, so it's in 25 countries. There's about 2,500 cases outside the U.S. One person has died outside the U.S., and that was, sadly, a gentleman from the Philippines. We have 11 potential cases in the U.S. First case was discovered in the state of Washington. That person's already been discharged. We also have six in California, one in New York, one in Massachusetts, one in Arizona, and two in Illinois. So we're keeping very close tabs on this. The Hubei province, where Wuhan is 40 million people. And what China has done is locked down. Can you imagine locking down the Northeast? But they've basically locked down the whole Hubei province, which is 40 million people, and quarantined it 15 days ago. When it comes to U.S. travel, here's what we're doing. We're in touch every single day, maybe twice a day, with CDC, NIH, and the administration. Tori was just with the White House yesterday. And what we're doing, there's updates on our website. There's a holding statement, a toolkit, anything you need. We've gone out to our members, especially the corporate members, and said, look, if you need someone to tell what's going on, come to us, because there's a lot of folks that would prefer not to give updates or talk about it because, you know, the implications can have. So several of the corporate members have just come to us, and we've tried to, you know, keep everyone up to date. It's in the 14th, if someone is suspected of having this, they'll be quarantined for 14 days, and 14 days because to make sure. Then the way they're quarantined, they're finding out is they're interviewing people because the symptoms don't show, so it's right away. So it's a matter of who have you been, where have you been, who have you talked to, who relatives, all that, as much as they can get. And this quarantine is extremely important. This is what kept Ebola contained when there were, remember, there were quarantining people to their homes and all that in the U.S. over Ebola, but it really was one of the things that kept Ebola from spreading. The people are coming in, have been directed to 11 airports, and CDC and NIH people are at the 11 airports as people had come off planes. I want to put this in perspective. Elliot and I were having breakfast this morning. We're talking about these things, and these are very serious, but also perspective is, I think, so important. When SARS took place, there were 349 deaths from SARS. This has exceeded SARS in number of deaths. However, when SARS took place, there were it was something like 8,000 cases and those deaths. So from SARS, about 10% of the people that got SARS died. This right now is operating about 2%. So it's operating very differently than SARS. When you looked at Ebola, there were 29,000 cases of Ebola, 11 deaths in Africa. It was in three countries, 36 cases outside those three countries, and 15 deaths elsewhere. U.S. had 11 cases and had one death. So again, these things, as the media talks about them, it's not to make anything light, but understand what the actual implications are. In 2019, influenza, just to give you a perspective, 647,000 Americans were hospitalized with influenza and 61,000 died. So, and what we get every year is, hey, flu season's here, did you get a shot? But just, again, I'm trying to put perspective here. When SARS took place, a visit from China went down 30% within months. Right after SARS, 30% dip from China. And that was March through July of 2003. 10% dip in Asia. Give you an idea, China's changed a lot since then. 2002, we had 226,000 people came from China to the U.S. In 2003, that dropped to 157,000. So you see a 30% drop there. It came back to 203,000 in 2004. So a year later, it had come back, but not quite as back, and then started exceeding. It was 2005, 270,000. So you see these things take about 18 months, even though it may have passed. It's about a year, year and a half of recovery. American Airlines, United Airlines, and Delta have now canceled all of their flights through late March. So they put a date at the end of March of when they will begin flying, and I think you'll begin watching that's how they schedule aircraft and all of that. To put perspective now on China, 2018, we had 3.2 million Chinese visitors, up from that 200,000 I was speaking of when SARS happened. 2019, 3 million Chinese visitors. We dropped about, and we were projecting this year probably to be, drop another 5% in China, and this was before any of this happened. When you look at what's happening with bookings, U.S. bookings are now down 15% from China. From Africa, give you an idea, down just about 1%. Europe is up about 10%, so bookings from China. So what's happening is people are going, switching, and travel moves real fast. They have options. Something happens, one part of the world, people don't change their vacation, but they go somewhere else. So this is what's taking place. So if we look at it, in 2000, 1% of all our visitors came from China, 3% of all of our spending. 2019, 7% of all our inbound visitors from around the world to the U.S., 16% of our spending. So you're beginning to see. The 3 million Chinese that we had here last year spent $34 billion. Put that in perspective, 22 million Canadians spent less than the 3 million Chinese. So it gives a perspective of how important that is, 6,500 per person. What we're trying to do is in dialogue is to try and keep balance. The NIH has been fabulous on this, as has CDC. When last time when these things happened years ago, they wouldn't communicate with us. Now we're in communication every day. Dr. Fauci, I think, is doing a fabulous job from NIH saying it is not dangerous to fly in the U.S. It's very important that people understand that, and he keeps coming out and saying that. I was on a radio, we were doing a National Plan for Vacation Day radio blitz, and I was in like 15 stations back to back, and this was a week ago today, actually, and I was on the phone with a woman from Columbus, Ohio. This is a talk show radio person, Drive Time, and she said, Roger, she said, I'm going to Vail skiing on Friday. Is it safe? And you begin, when someone from Columbus, Ohio is asking you, is it safe? And that's the thing we have to play with, because these things can spin out of control. So Adam Sachs from Tourism Economics came out with some predictions, and they are just predictions, because you have to watch this thing and see what happens. But he says his belief is if acts like SARS, 20 to 22, we'll lose 1 point between 2020 and 2022, 1.6 million visitors from China. 56% of those will happen this year. To put that in perspective, that's about 900,000 fewer Chinese if that takes place, $10.3 billion. So a lot of your markets that get a lot of that Chinese visit. IPW is coming up. Raphael, I'll tell about, we're so excited about IPW in Las Vegas. It's starting the end of May through June 4th. Going to be great. But last year we had the largest number of Chinese delegates, so we're going to keep an eye on it. We're extending the registration for all those folks because, as Ellie and I were saying this morning, it could be a very different picture 6 weeks from now, and everyone would say there. The biggest impact, obviously, are California, as far as Chinese visitation, California, L.A., and San Francisco, New York, NYC, and Nevada, Las Vegas. As I said, it's SARS, 9.6% of the people who had got SARS died. Coronavirus at the moment, 2.5%. So it's behaving, as we say, differently. So we're watching it, we're monitoring it, we're communicating. We have to make sure we don't take an epidemic and turn it into an infodemic. And the media likes to do that. You watch when there's a hurricane, you've watched someone, one of the funniest things I ever saw was a hurricane. The announcer's like, he's standing like he's into the wind, and walking in back of him are people just going to work. And, you're going, wait a minute, what's going on here? So the other thing, the media does a horrible job, and this is our job, and this is what I want to share with today, is the all clear. The media does a horrible job of saying things are now okay. And we've got a job, it's us, U.S. Travel, everyone in this room, that as we get facts, we've got to communicate them. When swine flu happened, we had IPW was coming up in 32 days. I'm driving to work in the morning, I hear at 7 a.m. this swine flu, and I go, uh-oh. I called our controller, I said, do we have insurance? He said, I'm calling right now to try and get insurance on cancellation or attrition insurance. He called me back. He said, Lloyd's of London just canceled influenza insurance for any group at 4 o'clock this morning. So those things happen like that. So what we did is we had a massive communication to everybody, what's going on, in America and all that. And at IPW, we only lost seven people. Seven folks from Japan decided not to come to IPW, but every other registrant came. So this is the job we have as an industry. We really have to be the communicators, because the media is going to forget about this when the next thing happens. And we've got to tell the story and try and speed that recovery up and make sure we don't have as much harm as could be predicted. Now I'm going to go into what the remarks I was going to give. So now, with all that, sorry for that tenure, but I think it's so important for this group to know what's going on. First, I'm going to show you a little video. You know this, but I show this around for a lot of people, and it's about who we are. And it really talks about what we do, not just what we do, but beyond what we do as an industry. Can we roll the video, please?
Travel. It starts as an intention. To connect, explore, experience something new or familiar. The special moments we live through travel are possible because of the millions of workers who make every business trip, summer vacation, or weekend getaway the best America has to offer. Yet travel's benefits reach so much farther. It is America's ultimate opportunity, creating jobs that provide a quality life, powering growth for the U.S. economy, enhancing our national security while maintaining an efficient travel experience, showing the world what makes America great, all while creating memories and connecting us with one another. Travel to and within the United States employs 1 in 9 Americans and delivers $2 trillion to our economy, generating tax revenues that fund community needs. The many destinations, businesses, attractions, landmarks, natural wonders, and people that make up the travel industry are as dynamic and diverse as America itself, offering each visitor a unique view of why America is the world's best place to visit.
For over 75 years, the U.S. Travel Association has united the travel and tourism industry behind a voice that says, welcoming international visitors is critical to our economy and American jobs and our standing in the world. A modern air travel system is necessary to keep us competitive. Updating our infrastructure creates opportunity and keeps us better connected. Security and efficient travel are not mutually exclusive. We can and must have both. Promoting travel benefits communities across America and our country as a whole. Businesses and workers find real bottom line results when they meet face to face. And every American deserves to reclaim their vacation days and travel this great country. On behalf of our members and the entire industry, U.S. Travel takes on the complex issues to increase travel to and within the United States. We prioritize high-impact policies that grow every segment of America's travel economy and create good jobs that can't be outsourced. We identify opportunities, trends, and challenges. We deliver gold standard research that informs our industry and the policymakers that shape it. And finally, we engage the travel community, raising the profile of our industry in the eyes of our elected officials, the media, and the public. We proudly represent an essential component of our lives, our communities, and our country, travel. It's more than fun, it's serious business. And it is serious business, and on Wednesday, tomorrow, I'll be delivering the State of the Travel Industry at the National Press Club. So many industries, the automobile industry, the U.S. Chamber, do the State of, and we've never done that before, and so we're going to get up and talk about this to the media and to elected officials about the state of this industry. And really, it's to put this industry in perspective of the powerhouse that we are. And we've talked about a lot, but we've got to take and step this up so much more. I'm going to talk about international. When it comes to international, it's been the darling of when you look at our economy. 260 billion people, all because of work you do, 260 billion people, $260 billion, that'd be nice if 260 billion people, but $260 billion was spent making inbound travel our number one services export and our number two export overall. $69 billion trade surplus. And everyone talks about trade deficits and all this trade talk. Bottom line, we're the darling of this. 25% of all export surpluses come from our industry. And in fact, the number one export is transportation, which is Boeing. So if you really think about it, Boeing and travel is really what's driving our export economy. So when you look at that, we're projecting that, now this is was a couple of weeks ago, is we're projecting a 2% growth in inbound of international business. And that's before what happened. And Yogi Berra, my favorite philosopher, always said, predictions are very difficult, especially about the future. And I think that's true. But when you look at, one of the things I'm going to be talking about is, although this is so robust and is such a contribution to our economy and to how people think about America, we're losing share. And we basically, what's happening is we're not going down. As I say, we've been growing a little slower, but the rest of the world's up 4 to 8%. So when you look at Spain, France, places are really growing. And so while we're growing, we're just not growing as fast. Let me talk about that share. In 2015, we had 13.7% of all international inbound visitors. 2018, we had 11.7%. Last year, we had 11.2%. We're projecting that if things keep going the way they're going, we could end up with 10.4%. And so what does that mean? Well, the thing I want people to understand how important it is that little going from 13.7% to 11.7% between 15 and 18 was 4 million visitors, if we'd kept our share, almost $59 billion in revenue, and 120,000 jobs. And the message I keep bringing home to the folks in government, I say, you talk about manufacturing coming back to U.S., totally important, we love it. But a Toyota plant that's opening in, a Toyota partnership's opening in the South is 4,000 jobs. All the talk in Washington is where Amazon's, one of their 25,000 person headquarters is gonna come to the D.C. area. And I say, you know, you look at of that headquarters, they're so excited about 25,000, that little 2% is almost 5 Amazon headquarters in D.C. That little 2% is equivalent of opening 30 Toyota plants. And the plants are already built. We've got the national parks, we've got all the destinations, we've got the airports, we've got the hotels, we've got the beaches. It's already built. So that's so critical. December 20th is a great day because we reauthorized Brand USA. Reauthorized Brand USA through 2027. Now, what had happened is we got the funding vehicle, which is the ESTA fee, reauthorized a long time ago to 2027. And we said, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. And then all of a sudden, an error was made, and as we were putting the budget together, we had to take Brand USA out of a basket of cost savings and reinstate it. The way I explain it to folks I said, let's take Brand USA. What if a neighbor you've never met said, I'm going to give you $100 if you put $100 in this account? And at the end of the day, you know what you're going to have? $4,500. And that's all Brand USA is. It's folks that some not met, give us $100 million, we put $100 million in, and pops out $8 billion of incremental travel. So it's so easy just to explain, it's so logical, and I'm glad we got it done in December, because all the shenanigans you've been watching going on now, God knows when this could happen, because almost nothing was happening, and so we got the very last minute. In fact, I called Chris Thompson when he was at his son's wedding, and he was having a toast to his son, and I called and told him, and he cheered, and his son was so happy, he thought he was happy he got married. He was actually happy about Brand USA, but he's not telling his son that. So, in fact, first thing I did, I removed Chris's two houses from realtor.com, so he doesn't have to worry. But I want to thank all of you, so many of you, as the video said, it was engaging the entire travel community. On every single state, every single city, so many of you made calls, talked to people, said how important this is to my market, to what we do. And it was one of the things, it was white hat. I mean, we had Schumer and McConnell, who don't agree on anything, said Brand USA is a good thing. But Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy, who don't agree on anything, said Brand USA is a good thing. But the trick was to get it across finish line, which we did. So to everyone, thank you. We're good for 7 more years, and I hope we get to a day. Yeah. Well, thank you. I just hope we get to a day, because now we'll be on 17 years that, you know, 5 years from now, it's just an automatic. It should be an automatic. It's so logical. And so my friends at Commerce, Julie, and all your friends, appreciate all your help. National parks. You heard a lot. Gary spoke about national parks, and we had a great meeting. We had a great meeting with the acting National Parks Park Service Director and Lena McDowell, who's the Deputy Director for Management, at our board meeting. Gary was there, Elliot was there, Kathy was there, Todd Davidson, Vicky Varela, Diane Schober, Brad Dean, and we had a great conversation with them. And this guy, it was a bureaucrat who I really was encouraged by his attitude and how he's looking at things and how important they are. And he provided a lot of, but an opportunity to provide the insights from the tour operator inbound perspective, I think, was very important to keep that dialogue going, which you do so well. He talked about improving the experience, more technology, and clarifying the CUAs. And I'm glad to see that the fees changing and the CUA is pushing on. That's very important. And we got to stay on this because these things can change any day. So I think that's very great. And we'll have already setting up additional meetings to stay in touch with them and really take this dialogue we had and move it further. What I'm going to talk about tomorrow is talk about how great our industry, how big it is, how many people we employ. But I'm also going to focus on headwinds. Basically, we've had the greatest decade ever. We're on 120 months of straight growth, 10 years. Every single month was better than the month before. No industry does that. No industry, and it's all of you. But 120 months, as Dickens said, you know, it's the best of times. We don't want it to be the worst of times. And I think that's so important. Headwinds we're going to see, first of all, is responsible tourism. Responsible tourism. I like to use the word responsible tourism than sustainable. They too go, but I think responsible tourism is what we're all about and what we should be doing. We had a dialogue at our last board meeting, had a great session to really begin talking about this. We got a survey going out to members of what are the great things you're doing, because so many of you are doing terrific things in your destinations, those you have, and companies and all that. But we've got to be at the table. The five buckets we're talking about is climate and the environment, obviously extremely important. Destination stewardship, and that takes on overcrowding, homelessness, affordable housing, resident sentiment, all those things, and some great things are being done in many destinations to talk about that. Workforce, biggest problem we have is getting people. You talk about this low unemployment, getting people in this industry to work in this industry, huge workers, human trafficking. I recall 3 or 4 years ago when Sabre was leading the charge on human trafficking and couldn't get one hotel chain to talk about it. They didn't want people to think that something bad could happen in a hotel. Well, now they're all on board, and it's so important. It's such a critical issue that we are engaged in. And the benefits of travel, really talking about what happens about health, cultural, education, all the things that we do that are so important to vitality of life. So we got some research out that it's the number one issue of this whole environment sustainability, number one issue facing not us, but all companies. Microsoft has said they're going to go carbon negative in like 3 or 4 years, major, spending billions of dollars to do that. And this is on every boardroom table. And I think it's so important. And I had lunch with Arne Sorensen a week or so ago, and we were talking about this. And he said, it's so important we do things like that. He said, I really believe the traveler will still take the trip. The traveler that's going to a wedding, going on vacation, will take the trip. He said, but what I'm concerned about is the loud voice, if we're not there, if we're not doing it, that goes to the politician. And the politician that gets tremendous pressure from people in their constituencies to say, I'm going to do something about this. And legislation comes in that is going to be very difficult, and we have to be that's what we have to watch out for. We have to really make sure we're at the table and we're telling the story of the things that we're doing. The cruise industry, if I was a cruise industry, I'd be concerned. Because the cruise industry is not U.S. owned. They have no U.S. employees or very few U.S. employees, and they travel around and they have a lot of fuel and a lot of stories about them. So that's going to be who's going to get hit first. Airlines second. They're going to come after airlines. Flight shaming that's going on in Europe, we're beginning to see some talk of it in the Northeast, starting to talk about and how important it is. But yet every plane that is manufactured is more efficient than the last. And we've got to be talking about the things that we do, how important it is. Pure Michigan has got a new campaign they launched meanwhile in Michigan. And what they're talking about is the less understood places in Michigan, the great things you can do that you can see in Michigan. And I think that's important. Fred's done a phenomenal job in NYC and Company of talking about the neighborhoods you can see, the Brooklyns of things. Elliot and Washington talking about the Washington you don't know. And every one of us can tell where we're coming from about 10 great things that you'd be, love to do that people don't even know about. And so I think our job is to move these out. You'll hear from Kathy Ritter talking a little bit, doing tremendous things in Colorado Tourism Office with Leave No Trace, Care for Colorado, Explore Like a Local, and really talking about all the other things and moving and doing really some good things you'll hear about soon. Enterprise has recycled 8 million gallons of oil since 2009. Marriott, IHG, are together removing all individual toiletries. Everyone else is following. But it's got to be more than saying individual toiletries and hang up your towel. That's just window dressing. We really have to get serious about this. And we, as I say, we have to be at the table, or this will be something that's going to eat us. As I said, I'm going to say in my remarks, we want travel and tourism to be enjoyed by our children, our grandchildren, our future. I had an opportunity to a few years ago to have dinner with the head of Boise Cascade. And I said, what's the story on no trees? I hear trees are, he said, are you kidding me? He said, there are more trees in the United States than there were at the time of revolution. He said, they may be in different places. He said, but my business is based on trees. He said, every tree we cut down, we plant four. He said, we are growing trees faster and more than ever before. He said, but no one knows that. And I think people have to know what we're doing, all the things that we're doing for the environment and caring about the culture and all that. That's very important. Infrastructure. Infrastructure is very concerning. Infrastructure is one of our top priorities. And what we're going to talk about tomorrow is travel industry has sort of like been on the fringe. We've got to get deep into this. Our voice. And our voice is a new voice for infrastructure, but it's important. Because this will become the choke point. This will become the choke point. We're already seeing people are making decisions on where they will go, on how long they sit in the car. So people will say, okay, people that may be from the Washington, D.C., where I live, that might have gone to Hilton Head, are maybe saying, well, maybe I'm going to move up to Virginia Beach or Myrtle Beach. And they're judging it by how long in the car. They're judging it how long they have to be on a plane. So this infrastructure is going to be a problem. The capacity and the capability of our airports, again, Ellie and I were talking about this breakfast, it's just not increasing the number of runways, but it's increasing the experience. Shouldn't people, as you go through around the world and see the great airports, shouldn't we be in that game? And we're not. So that's so important. We're going to be talking about the future of mobility and a platform there. If you look at the, if you haven't seen it, that's coming soon, the Virgin Hyperlink in Nevada with a Boring company is going to be basically moving people at 600 miles an hour. Can you imagine that? On a tube. I've seen the videos on it. It's a very exciting project, but it's there. Electric cars. We're pushing very hard. Ford just announced $2 billion for a new electric car plant. This is coming. We have to make sure we have the capacity and that we know how to handle a highway system with electric and driverless vehicles and all those things are coming. We've got to get the infrastructure. There's policies for freight in the United States. There's no policy for people. So we've got to say, hey, we've got to have a policy for people when it comes to infrastructure. Public-private partnerships, increasing the PFC, which is a $4 fee that's in the tickets of the airports used to borrow money for bonds. It's Tampa Airport's got big growth, LA, San Francisco, LaGuardia, New York. A lot of this comes from this PFC, so we think we've got that to be raised a bit. Biometrics. Now, biometrics are extremely important. The ISTAR chief economist, I said, when we get to 100 million visitors, and the Commerce Department and Travel and Tourism Advisory Board is way up above that for just around the corner, you know, 116 million or something like that, Julie. I don't know what the number you have, but it's somewhere close to that. But I said, what happens when we get to 100 million? Our chief economist, she said, well, 100 million new visitors. When we have 100 million visitors in the U.S., that's 5,000 more people a day at Kennedy, 4,000 more people a day in Miami, 4,300 a day in L.A. Can you imagine any one of those airports having to handle 4,000 to 5,000 people every single day? The problem is it can't be done. The real estate and the human bodies cannot do it. So technology is going to be so important. Biometrics. I've seen demonstrations on biometrics. It's amazing. It's 99.99% accurate. And I watched a demonstration where 10 people walk along and all of a sudden says, oop, come here, Steve. Let's talk to you. Everyone in the front row walked right by because biometrics. We're going to get to the point where you walk, you get out at the airport, and you just walk right to and you get on the plane. And the biometric is going to say, yes, that is Gary. He's getting on the plane. It's still Gary. And that's what biometrics are going to do. Now, what has to happen with biometrics is we're going to get pushed back on privacy. We're going to get pushed back on how data is going to be handled. And we have to be very smart of how we do that. But and I assume what's going to happen with biometrics and people who talk at Homeland Security is going to become an opt-in. It'll become a thing of you can go this line or you can walk right through. I'll give them my high school grades if they're not that good, if they want them. So the whole privacy. Real ID, I realize you're talking inbound, but also a lot of you have destinations and are here that do everything. Real ID is really important. Real ID, back 15 years ago, the 9/11 Commission said we've got to have a driver's license that has data of who this person really is, if they are, live where they are a citizen, all that. And they came out, you have to have a Real ID driver's license. Well, we've kicked the can down the road for 14 years. States have said, we just can't do it, it's too costly. And finally, Homeland Security said, absolutely, October 1st, this year, if you do not have an ID, you're not getting on a plane. Oh, good. So they put a stake in the ground. Well, we did some research. 57% of Americans have no idea what the hell they're talking about. 57% of Americans don't even know it exists. 99 million Americans, as of October 1st, do not have a real ID. And they may not even know it. So we predict the first day, if this doesn't change, 80,000 people won't get on a plane. The first week, 400,000 people won't get on a plane. Now, if you're a hotelier or you have a meetings complex or whatever, what are you going to do when 5% of your people don't show up at night? And you say, well, you owe us a cancellation fee. They say, no, it's the government's fault. Or if people don't come for your convention, you're expecting several hundred, and you get 10% less, and you have to pay an attrition clause. You say, no, it's not our fault. It's a good. But worse than that, the mess it's going to create. When that person in the front of the line is told that they can't go to see their grandchild who's being born, and they can't go, that grandmother's not going to say, oh, okay, I'll catch them for their first birthday. No, they're going to argue and fight and scream. And so it's going to cause the rest of us to back up. So this Real ID, really important. We're pushing very hard for policy for why isn't TSA PreCheck acceptable? Why isn't Global Entry acceptable? Why can't you get a digital driver's license versus having to schlep down to the DMV and stand online? And the problem is when people get there, they go for it, and the person at the DMV says, oh, you need your Social Security card. What? I didn't know that. And they have to go back again and come back again. So this is a real problem, and the whole industry's got to push on this. As I said, we're going to do a national press conference, state of the industry, and talk about all these things and where our industry is and the role that our industry plays, the role that you play. And I always say the most important thing about international visitation is the understanding it builds. You know, Mark Twain said so long ago, travel is fatal to narrow-minded as prejudice and bigotry. And it's true. All of us go to different shows around the world, whether it's ITB, WTM, anywhere in the world, and we'll sit there in the Middle East pavilions, and we'll watch the folks in Palestine and Israel. They're all chatting, where are you going for dinner tonight and all that, and then they get back home, and they got all sorts of problems. This industry, I've said to every head of the State Department, is your stealth public diplomacy. What's it worth to have 10 million people going home somewhere and saying they're really nice people, they're really great? Our research says 71% of the people who've come here feel very good and positive about Americans and American policy versus 20% who don't. So our job is to get these people here and keep them coming. So we've got some challenges ahead. We've got to watch this coronavirus extremely careful. We've got the best years ahead. I think working together as we've done so much, everyone in this room and all of us working together, it can be an even better decade than the last. But we've got work to do because there's a lot of headwinds are coming at us. We've got to take them all on. Thank you very much for what you do. I sure appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you. What a wealth of information, right? Well, let's take a quick break, and very quick. That means get a drink, go to the bathroom, and be back.